Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Big Ugly Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Wesley Smith, owner of Juggernaut Training Systems, one of the top raw powerlifters in the world ever. On today's Big Ugly Podcast, I'm going to be talking about Urban Meyer, what Ohio State needs to do with him, the first NFL preseason game of the year, NBA over and unders, who's going to go over their number, who's going to go under their number, and recapping UFC 227, TJ Dillashaw defeating Cody Garbrandt to retain his title, and Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson losing his title to Henry Cejudo after 11 successful title defenses and doing so in a bit of a controversial decision. This is the Big Ugly Podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening. Welcome, welcome. Big weekend in sports from UFC, college football, NFL, NBA news, all kind of stuff going on. So I want to start off with UFC 227 at the Staples Center. I was there in attendance, a electric evening of fights. And we'll start right at the top with TJ Dillashaw defending his title with a first round TKO of Cody Garbrandt. Dillashaw showed a lot of patience, accuracy. There were definitely moments where both guys looked like they were getting rocked. I mean, for a very short fight, TJ had that big mouse under his eye. And coming off that first fight where so many people were saying that TJ got saved by the bell in the first round when Garbrandt knocked him down, I think that people watching this one could have said that both of them had real opportunities to win because they're both sitting in the pocket and throwing hard punches. But for TJ to come away now with two, close, very competitive wins, as competitive as a fight that ends in the first round could be, I think that proves that it's definitely not a fluke. Again, just tremendous accuracy. He sat in there through those three hooks in a row. Tremendous performance by TJ. Congrats to him. Congrats to my jiu-jitsu professor, Philippe De La Monica, who's also TJ's head coach, though he probably puts being TJ's coach a little bit higher on his resume than he does coaching me. In the co-main event of the evening, I think we had the most surprising result of the night, in which Henry Cejudo took the title from Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. DJ had defended his title 11 times in a row successfully, and to lose it was disappointing, and to lose it in the manner that he did, I think, even more disappointing. Though watching the fight in person, the energy definitely did seem to be for Cejudo, who was born in Los Angeles and seemed to be a bit more of a crowd favorite. And we talked about in the preview with Brent Littell how DJ, for all of his in-ring accomplishments, has just never garnered the same type of fanfare that other fighters of his level have. So maybe that was part of it. So watching the fight in person, it's easy to let the cheers of the crowd and that energy kind of mislead you in influencing you in the way that you think about the fight. And of course, the judges aren't supposed to take this into account, but when there's a takedown and there's a big cheer for one guy and the crowd's chanting one guy's name, I think it's just human nature, essentially impossible for that to not play some factor in the way that they decide things. Because if you look at the stats of Johnson outstriking Cejudo, 121-80 and 81-51 in significant strikes, Cejudo got a couple takedowns, but he didn't do anything with those takedowns. And even they had several takedowns where he got him down, but DJ was able to scramble up really quickly. I think it should have been DJ's fight, especially with the idea that, you know, if you're going to take the champion, like, you really got to beat him. And it was at best, you know, at best what it was, a kind of close, controversial decision. Definitely not the dominant type of performance that you would normally need to take someone's title belt. So that begs the question, what happens next? You know, Henry Cejudo, in his post-fight interview, he was wanting that super fight with the winner of Dillashaw Garbrandt, you know, which then became TJ Dillashaw. TJ said he wants the super fight. You know, there's all this talk that this was offered to Demetrius Johnson before and that DJ didn't want it, but I would have a really hard time saying that this super fight can happen before Demetrius Johnson gets a rematch against Henry Cejudo. You know, you don't have someone who defends their title successfully 11 times, loses a very close decision, and doesn't get a rematch after that. I think DJ's got to get that rematch before there can be any super fight talk between the bantamweight and featherweight bantamweight and featherweight guys. So I think that needs to happen. While that's going on, a Cejudo DJ 3, does Dillashaw just wait around until after that? Possibly. But if Dominic Cruz is healthy, I think a great case can be made for Dominic Cruz versus TJ Dillashaw, and then the winners of Cejudo DJ 3 and Cruz Dillashaw 2 taking that super fight to potentially unify those titles between those classes, and whether that's at a catch weight of 130 pounds or it's the 125 guys coming up to 135, we will see. The super fight would be awesome, and it was great with Cormier and Stipe, and I think it'd be great with these guys. But that Cejudo DJ 3 really needs to happen before. You can't let someone as great a champion as Demetrius Johnson is not get that rematch. Moving on to the world of college football, controversy swirling at The Ohio State University, and 23,000 fans signing a petition to keep Urban Meyer from being, and I quote, wrongfully fired, as it's his assistant coach Zach Smith, and I think mounting evidence that Zach Smith definitely domestically abused his wife, and that certainly Urban Meyer's wife was aware of it. And I think over the time span that they're talking about, it's very unlikely that Urban Meyer was not aware of it much longer before he took action than he's letting on. So to those 23,000 fans, you know, signing this petition and having a rally to keep Urban Meyer in his position, I think that they're letting their fandom do the thinking for them rather than, you know, their real moral compass. That if we were to put the shoe on another foot, and let's say this exact same situation was happening with a University of Michigan assistant coach, and that Jim Harbaugh, you know, is sitting there in Ann Arbor doing these same things, what would those 23,000 Ohio State fans think about that situation? I think it would be a very useful exercise for them to put themselves in those shoes as they think about, you know, what are they defending. So it all really comes down to the question, should Urban Meyer be fired for the actions of another man? And, you know, Urban Meyer is not accused of, you know, battering his wife the way that Zach Smith is. So in that sense, no, I don't think he should, but that's not what it's all about. It's about the cover-up of this for many years. It's about Urban Meyer having knowledge of this for maybe up to 9 years, and, you know, definitely longer than he's letting on, and not taking action in this. You know, they talk about in the Ohio State, kind of code of conduct for their players. It talks about treating women with respect, and as it unfortunately is so many times, those are just words, and they're not adhered to when a tough decision truly needs to be made, like letting go of a very talented, helpful coach. And not only did he not take action in letting him go, they knew about this when they were coaching at Florida, And then he went and rehired Zach Smith to Ohio State. And it's almost like he would have had a pretty easy out there, because he wouldn't have had to fire him at all when Urban Meyer, you know, retired temporarily from his job at the University of Florida. It would have been an easy break point to just not rehire Zach Smith to Ohio State, but he hasn't done that. He has not been forthright in his handling of the situation. And what's the reason? Why is someone going to lie about when they knew about something? I think there's where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's going to be more and more coming out to the story. Now, what is an appropriate discipline action by Ohio State? Is it firing Urban Meyer? No, I do not think that Urban Meyer deserves to be fired for the information that we have available to us today, Monday, August 7th. Monday, August 6th at this time in the afternoon. But 14 days from now, when Ohio State says that their investigation is going to be complete, maybe he'll be deserving of being fired then. I do think that they need to send a very strong disciplinary message, and would a up to a year-long suspension be appropriate? Yes, I think so. In a lot of ways, if that's a year suspension without pay of any kind, I think it would almost be the equivalent thing of him being fired, because if he got fired today for it, yeah, he's not going to get a job coaching college football in 2018, but he would get another job in 2019, because when you're that good at your job, which Urban Meyer has proven again and again to be, you keep getting chances, even if you are mishandling, big moral issues like they have going on right now. We got football games on TV. The first preseason game of the season, the Hall of Fame game between the Baltimore Ravens and Chicago Bears, was last week. As is often the case, the first preseason game, it's not a great one to watch, but it is got to be a celebration that there are football games back, and there'll be football games, every week until early February. So excited about that. Not too many takeaways, and I definitely think people are overreacting to Lamar Jackson's performance. They're judging him not on, how does this look for the first preseason game of a guy's career, but they're thinking, how would this look if he was playing like this in the middle of the season? That's just not the case. The guy's got 2-3 weeks practice with his team under his belt. And people continue to discount his ability as an NFL passer, whether that's under center or playing from the shotgun. Going into the draft, there was talk from so many people, even highly respected guys like Bill Polian, that Lamar Jackson should be considering a move to wide receiver. And I think it's just so difficult for people to separate the idea of someone being an exceptional athlete and knowing that they can actually play quarterback in the way that the NFL demands. That someone being exceptionally fast and being able to throw the ball accurately enough are not mutually exclusive ideas. And certainly Lamar Jackson, isn't setting the world on fire with his completion percentage coming out of Louisville. He's often knocked for his inaccuracy with only a 59.1% completion percentage, but his receivers did drop 12% of their catchable targets, a much, much higher figure than someone like Josh Allen, who also had a very low completion percentage and was given a pass by a lot of people in saying that, yeah, but his receivers dropped so many passes, where Josh Allen's wide receivers dropped 7.8% of their passes, so significantly less, 5% less than the number of passes dropped by the Louisville receivers for Lamar Jackson. And while there are people out there saying Lamar Jackson needs to switch to wide receiver, I haven't really heard anyone say that Josh Allen needs to switch to tight end. But if that's the comparison that, if that's what they're going to say about Jackson, they should be saying the same thing about Josh Allen. I think if Jackson is given time, to mature, he's not thrust into the game with heavy expectations on him too soon, which I'd say this year might mean getting a start at week 12 or after, as I don't believe the Ravens will be in playoff contention. I think they're going to see a lot of things from Lamar Jackson that are going to have Baltimore Ravens fans very excited. So don't be a prisoner of the moment. Don't get caught up in, you know, a couple series from the first preseason game of the kid's career. Very, very talented athlete. You know, ran a complex system for Bobby Petrino at Louisville. And, you know, everyone wants to talk about, well, how can he do under center? NFL quarterbacks aren't playing all the time from under center anymore. And if you think about, you know, a guy like Nick Foles and how successful he is with run-pass options, how much more successful can Lamar Jackson be? Because how much more of a threat is he to the defense to run the ball himself? Tremendous athlete. So I think just be patient, let him develop, and there's going to be some good stuff. Finally, NBA over-unders. The Westgate Sportsbook released over-unders for all 30 NBA teams. And I think there's a couple who are definitely going to be going over their number and a few who should be going under their number. So for the teams who I expect to go over their projected win total by the Westgate, the Celtics were projected as fifth with 57.5 wins by the Westgate Sportsbook. I think the odds that they get hit as hard by injury as they did last year, you know, losing Gordon Hayward essentially for the entire year and Kyrie for a good bit as well, is very unlikely. Jason Tatum showed so much growth in the latter part of the season into the playoffs. If he comes out the beginning of the year playing like that as well, I think that all of those things bode very well for the Celtics, that, you know, high chance that they are healthier than they were last year, as well as I think that Philly is going to push them very hard for the number one seed, and they will understand that the importance of that number one seed because the Sixers and the Celtics are going to have such a great rivalry next year and in several years to come, where last year having the number one seed wouldn't have really been that attractive of an idea because that would have earned them a second round matchup with LeBron James. So I expect the Celtics to go over their 57.5 projected wins. The Spurs projected at 43.5 wins, which wouldn't be putting them in the playoffs based on all the other projections. You know, probably a lot of people listening to this may have not even been alive the last time that the Spurs didn't make the playoffs. And last year they won 47 games, essentially without Kawhi Leonard, who only played 9 games. And not only without Kawhi Leonard, but also with, you know, the uncertainty and controversy and just weird stuff going on with him hanging over the team for such a long part of it. So you go from essentially a Kawhi-less Spurs who won 47 games, and now you're adding DeMar DeRozan, and they're projecting them to only win 43.5 games. I think that Greg Popovich feels like he's got something to prove, that the Spurs are going to come out with a chip on their shoulder, that DeMar DeRozan is going to play with a chip on his shoulder all year from feeling like he was, you know, lied to and really just disrespected by the Raptors, and that the Spurs will go over their 43.5 projected win total. The Lakers projected to win 48.5 games by Westgate. LeBron, a lot of new players, a lot of young guys improving tremendously. You know, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball, Kyle Kuzma, very, very, you know, young talent, guys who are, you'd expect to be taking big leaps as players, even without the addition of LeBron James to serve as a mentor, as motivation, as, you know, someone who can facilitate so much for those guys. And then you have a bunch of hungry veteran guys on one-year contracts with something to prove. You're also not going to have LeBron, you know, essentially taking a month off, you know, being on the court but not doing much to help the team, because he's not going to be trying to force the Lakers into some big trade as he was with the Cavs leading up to the trade deadline last year. From just a betting standpoint, I think the Clippers are a good bet as Westgate. There's a 5-game discrepancy between Westgate's projection and Bet Online's projection, where with Bet Online projecting the Clippers to win 5 more games than Westgate does. Westgate's got them at 35.5 projected wins, and BetOnline's got them at 40.5, and that's the biggest discrepancy between the two. So from just a betting standpoint, the Clippers can be a good bet there. Who's going to go under their projected win total? The Pelicans are projected to win 45.5 games by the Westgate Sportsbook, and as amazing as Anthony Davis is, and he deserves all the praise he gets and more, I think what the Pelicans showed in the playoffs last year as they were surging at the end of the year, I don't know that that's going to carry over to this season. Rajon Rondo is a significant loss. DeMarcus Cousins is a significant loss. Bet Online projects the Pelicans to only win 42.5 games, which is among the biggest discrepancies. So they're projecting 3 less wins than the 45.5 that Westgate did. So I'm going to go under 45.5 for the Pelicans. Also, the Warriors. The Warriors are projected to win the most games this year, 62.5 games. And so much of that talk is based on, you know, them signing DeMarcus Cousins, and oh my God, they have 5 All-Stars, and you know, cancel the season, just give them the trophy. Well, they won 58 games last year, and DeMarcus Cousins isn't going to play until, you know, February, March, and so he's not really going to have that big of an effect on their regular season win total, which is what we're talking about here. So oftentimes last year they were apathetic in the regular season. There seems to be some level of dysfunction brewing with Kevin Durant. You know, DeMarcus Cousins is not someone who is averse to causing locker room drama and all that. I do expect them to be in the finals, but I don't think that they're going to have the necessary consistent motivation to win 63 plus games during the season. Along with that, you know, they're projected as 62.5 wins by the Westgate, you know, Bet Online. They're projecting them as 65.5 wins, and yeah, take that for what you will, a pretty big discrepancy there. But I don't know that they're an improved regular season team, as their biggest offseason change, adding DeMarcus Cousins, isn't going to affect, you know, more than maybe the last quarter of the regular season. So that's the Big Ugly Podcast. Thanks for listening. Subscribe on iTunes. Drop me a 5-star review. Help more people find the show. Check out my other podcast, The Jug Life, for all things powerlifting and weightlifting, and the bonus episode to that, Beers with Chad. Later this week, I'm going to be talking with Miles Burris, former Oakland Raiders linebacker, and we'll be previewing the AFC. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.